Let's sit.
No more.
Let's learn. Let's evolve. Let's talk. So sit back and open your binungs and join in the conversation.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Today on Let's Talk, we have a special edition covering the breaking news yesterday of bulldozers clearing the sacred site for development at Deebing Creek, 40 kilometres west of Brisbane, near Ipswich, Queensland. The site holds cultural significance for the traditional custodians of Deebing Creek, harbouring the unmarked remains of ancestors. A protest camp was established over 3 years ago to stop the development. Dan Rennie is on the ground speaking with the local traditional custodians and members of the camp as bulldozers clear the sacred site.
Yeah, we just had a bit of an explosion here at the fence. The security getting over aggressive with the mob here. It's very, very tense. But the mob that are here are very, very peaceful, very, very calm. There's a lot of aggression from the police and the security, which is it's a bit mind blowing when you're looking at it here on the ground. I've got DK here with me. How you going, brother?
Yeah, not too bad. Could be better, but yeah, I'm here.
That was pretty crazy what just happened.
Yeah, it was crazy. Some of the boys here, they represent unions, and they spoke to some of the on-site workers in regards to safety and health and safety issues, and they wanted to speak to their union rep from the other side of the fence. And during the course of that, from my perspective, it looks like one of the boys got pushed by one of the police, and the boys just, the union boys from this side of the fence on standing with us pushed that fence open.
Pushed it back.
And yep. Buckled it.
And buckled it over. They're currently trying to fix it now to keep you out of your home.
You might hear the tap drill in the background.
This is your home here. DK, could you give us your name, your mob, your country?
Yeah, DK. As part of what I've been doing, standing for here, is for all the families that been dragged through here. I descend from two twins that got dragged over here. Walked over with the oppressors on horseback, and there were two twins that were 7 years old when they came through Deebing Creek, and I'm a descendant of one of the twins, and that's on the Yagara and the Yugambeh side. They actually are descendants of two gentlemen, proper initiated peoples that had the breastplates on them, one being King Sandy and his father-in-law, King Jackie.
We're hearing that drill there in the background. This is the mob trying to put that fence back up. But how long have you been down here, DK?
Well, over 3 years. We'll be almost pushing three and a half. And just been standing on the uncertainty between state territory versus the territorial sovereignty of the local mobs here in Ipswich, or what we call Toolmore. And just seeing what's happening and the engagement on site, it resonates from what happened with me like good 11 years ago from the eviction from Musgrave Park. So this is like Musgrave Park being like the saltwater part of the Yagara language group region, and now in the freshwater part, these guys, the state in particular, are standing with these privatised developers who are also aligned with the state due to the priority development access granted over these lands. These guys have got no respect for cultural heritage in concerning the local Indigenous peoples of this area. By working with statutory instruments to trump the common law doctrine of native title itself, like there's no communal group rights being afforded in the scenario. So you've got, people that do have a connection report, but they're acting upon the wrong instrument and failing to inform the extended families of the same region, because we all know one family doesn't constitute a clan, let alone a tribe. So how does one family override the rest of the community, the social cohesion, when we talk about kin law, when we talk about totems, when we talk about all of that? One person might have one totem, and yeah, they might be connected through all the skin law, but each skin has a groupings of totems associated, and that is what's been vilified in this scenario.
What happened here this morning, bros?
There was like a dawn raid. Allegedly, there was a trespass notice issued to the occupiers I don't believe anyone's got that on their birth certificate. So how it's a legal binding document, it's beyond me. But yeah, due to the nature of that document, there's been some negotiations between the municipal law, Ipswich City Council, and the applicants for the YUP, the Yuggera Yirrkal Native Title Application Determination pending. And they've reached an MOU to try to erect a cultural heritage, a cultural centre out right. this way. So not too sure where, how, who, why this is going to go ahead, because there's not enough due diligence when you start reverse engineering the conversation along the lines of free, pre and prior informed consent. You know, like back to that discussion about, you know, one family constituting a tribe. If the whole community is not involved, given the magnitude of how many tribes that got brought through this area, and some of them didn't leave this, there's no pre and prior informed consent. There's probably no better way to put it. Like, without the disclosure to all of the tribes that are involved, it's an act of genocide. Mm. And it's complicit to cleaning up an international crime scene facilitated by the state.
We're watching displacement. You know, our mob being displaced in real time here. This is, you know, this is something that people think is a myth or happened in the past, but we're watching it unfold right in front of our eyes. Mob who can't go back to their homes now because, and of course, you know, protecting of the sacred trees and the burial site. You know, we're watching this unfold right before our eyes, and no one's doing anything about it except for us mob standing out here in solidarity. The police are complicit. They're allowing this to happen, the security as well. I don't think they understand. I've spoken to a couple of the police who have no idea what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mind-bending to watch this unfold in front of you.
Yeah, you know, like, it's... You got to consider, you know, like, the treaty's been put on the table, a state treaty, via the Anastasia Palaszczuk, the Traxtor Treaty Bill. I think it might be an act, I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that one. But, you know, like... They talk about truth and healing. This was Tullamore Truth and Healing Embassy. And the fact that they're relying on state instruments to topple the potential of this becoming an institution, it just shows where the value of that treaty is going to lay. Like, they got no loyalty to any form of agreement, you know, to that has the potentiality of being formed. Like, if this is what it's going to look like now, than the treaty in the future, and the national voice to inclusion to constitutional reform, we got no hope in hell.
We captured some audio before of a negotiation that wouldn't happen between the police liaison officer and the mob here. What was going on there? Because the police liaison is supposed to be, the cops talk to them, they talk to us.
Yeah, the police liaison's officers, they're just rent-a-cops. They've got no powers to arrest anybody. They're an instrument between the police and the community. What we have is the fence between the police and the toy coppers, the PLOs, and they're failing even to sit down and talk to one 70-year-old woman out here. She's an elder in this community, been contributing heavily, and their family's been here for eons. And they're just sticking to... They're loyal to their paycheck, not their identity. Mm. You know, like, I reckon, you know, what needs to happen is all these identified positions, they're not loyal to the soil that they've been granted on. I think, you know, what needs to happen is they all need to be checked and the loyalty, because they're just compradors. Mm. They're the loyal to the crown in right, which we believe is not right. Because, you know, like, we're talking internationally, you looking at the king's coronation. When was the crown in right of Queensland coronated?
Mm.
No one will give me that answer. That's tumbleweed. And I've been talking with the Attorney General, the Honourable Shannon Fentiman, MP, multiple state members like Jim Madden, and they've forwarded a lot of my questions onto Craig Crawford and again, the Attorney General, the Crown Prosecutor. And these guys won't even respond. So...
Shame.
Yeah, well, it's... Well, in law... You know, if I was to go into face a judge and I was silenced in the face of a question at law, that they would deem that an act of omission alluding to guilt or my guilt. Mm-hmm. So by them not responding to my particular line of questioning, they're actually forming a tacit consent formed via their acquiescence. Mm. So, you know, like these questions are really, really particular and specific that I've formed. I ask them, when did any of our First Nations or autochthonous ethnic peoples or the sovereignty ever accept the title of Aboriginal itself? Now, Aboriginal, when you look at the etymology of this word, it has a pre-Roman origin. Mm. And if they can't provide evidence of us accepting that via free, pre and prior informed consent, then they're committing an act of identity theft through the proposal of this state treaty. Because they want a treaty with this fictitious race to appease their radical title. That's an anachrony.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense. They're putting people who tick that box and want to go down this path due to the corporate side of it in a position which is juxtaposed. And it might sit in their law, but, you know, there's no precedence of that in blackfella law. And same as what we're dealing with here, the magnitudes of all the tribes that have been massacred or allegedly massacred, it's now on record by the Ipswich City Council that it's a reported massacre, because it started off as an allegation, but now it's on public record that it's a reported massacre. There's nothing in tribal law as a precedence to deal with this magnitude of this problem. So there's a big problem in this backyard of the Yuggera, of the Yurrupul, all the peoples locally, with the tribal interests being of ethnic factions from elsewhere, like as far as Torres Strait Islands, up to Burketown, New South Wales. I mean, you know, predecessors of these places. These guys, some of these mobs still practice their sorry business in a ceremonial, customary practice. Mm. If the repatriation doesn't go ahead, their human rights have been there's a breach to their human rights at customary law. So that creates a religious vilification. Like, if these guys can't practice their spiritual practices and beliefs to get their mob home and, you know, back to where they belong, then, you know, there's a hindrance to their sovereignty conducted by state instruments. Mm. That's genocide. Mm. That's being complicit to genocide. Nothing but. Now, I don't blame our people. I blame these instruments. I want that to be on the record. You know, we all got to have a crack at it, but, you know, the best way to go forward is as a community. Mm. That way you got somebody to fall back on, you got wisdom, you got all of the peoples that have different chapters to the overall story, because we all carry something differently, being part of a social cohesion, you know, being a protector or a carrier of a certain songline, because all the songlines being left in one person's hands, that's a big risk. Mm-hmm. What if that person gets dementia? What if that person's greedy? What if they forget? You know what I mean? Just a simple forgetful moment, and it's put on record as part of protection of Aboriginal cultural heritage. You know, there's that word again, but that's what's provided, and it's slept on, and we've missed out and slept on and forfeited the human rights to protect these things, because songlines, they're not exclusive to one area. Songlines sometimes allude to the migratory patterns of animals passing through country and connects to another country, and it might stop somewhere, it might start somewhere, but there's a whole line of it which involves and encompasses many different autochthonous tribal factions. And without them knowing what's happening upstream, and there's a interruption into that, you know, that streamline, that is acting complicit to genocide also.
There's a fence that goes as far as the eye can see here, and this is a real special place. You can feel it when you come here. How big is this site? And yeah, talk to me about the history, the special nature of this area.
All right. Well, where we're standing, it's a state easement, and they've actually stopped people earlier in the piece. They're not stopping it now, but this easement leads to the heritage protected site, state heritage protected site of the cemetery. Mm. Now, when we start looking at what's the difference between a burial ground? What's the difference between a cemetery? What's the difference between a graveyard? Mm. Now, a cemetery, it's usually associated with religious factions. In this scenario, the Salvos, who were the part of the Aboriginal Protection Board through Reverend Fuller, Salvation Army, he was the one that made the applications for the grants to have the mission go ahead, and it was approved for sort of free camping or, you know, transitional sort of space for the mobs in 1872, and then it turned into a mission around 1879, I believe. Mm. I could be wrong, but 92 and 97. Mm. That's when there was a period there where they weren't inmates indentured into the mission, but then in the 1897 period, that's when the grant for via the Aboriginal Protection Society, which is also has historical roots or heritage roots back to the UK. Mm. That's what granted the site. You know, there was a little conglomerate of mob that was acting on that, including some like medical physicians, I think that's the word, the Foot family or Crib, one of them. But yeah, there was a number of them that were acting to keep this mission going, and then, you know, generations later, multiple decades later, a couple centuries even, we're still dealing with this crap. Mm-hmm. And it's all just leftovers, residual effects from the ethnic cleansing back in the day. Well, it's only ethnic cleansing to their mob in that age, but because we're still dealing with it, it's evidence of a Holocaust. Nothing but.
DK, thanks for yarning with us on Let's Talk, Roz.
All right, no worries.
And your first and last name?
Jill Davidson. I'm from the younger, one of the elders. I just don't want the place that... There's just desecrators everywhere, wanting to chop the trees down, and we've got the corridor for the animals. At the back here, the possums, the koalas, frogs, and they've just chopped most of their trees down. And this is a national heritage. This is passed us. So what they've done is all the wrong things.
Yep.
And whoever will give them the okay to do that needs charging.
The developers at a press conference today had Yuggera people with them who approved this.
Yeah, they're the native title mob, and they're half my age, and they don't know the history of this place.
Native title applicants with their determination still pending. That would be accurate.
So if they're claiming to be Yuggera people as well, and you're both saying that you're Yuggera people...
They're still under courtship.
Yeah.
There's two of them that are Yuggera. Three of them that are Yuggera. Four are still, I don't know. What are they?
Yeah, the applicants, it's like a merger of the Yuggera and the Yuggera pool. That's what the...
It's going to go before the court.
What was that question again?
Well, because the developers at, say, their media conference today, they had Yuggera spokespeople with them claiming that they're supporting the project.
Yep.
They're going to build a cultural centre here. I'm just, I guess...
But from what from I can't get at, they're going to put, 20,000 or 2,000 houses around the cultural centre. I don't see that going to happen.
Is that a feasible practice? Like, we're talking about...
cultural centre with all these houses around, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, it's going to be like a keeping space for all the sensitive materials, including bone, skeletal remains and artefacts that have been...
No, but people having their houses built around the
centre. Yeah, and having people's houses built that close to...
cultural centre.
Well, heritage that significant and sensitive, you know, it's insensitive. And, you know, like, let's revisit that question again, what you stated earlier, real quick, asked. You've got to look at when in the Mabo decision that led to the native title, you know, scenario, they've advocated for the common law doctrine of native title. Now, what's been worked on and what seems to be the problem is the Native Title Act is a statutory thing. So in the state legislation, they protect the rights of individuals and family groups. But in this scenario, you've got a lot of family members that haven't been rightfully informed about a lot of these...
No, they're not informing hardly anyone.
Anything that's going ahead. So there's no true pre and prior free informed consent been achieved. And, you know, when we look at that model, like the statutory legislation, how it protects individuals, how does that sit in the common law doctrine of native title, which is communal groups' rights? If the communal group was not informed of this practice, it's actually an action that's complicit to genocide of the rest of the families, because each, like, member of the tribes have a responsibility to the social cohesion of the nation or the clan in particular via their family groups, but through their totems. Now, one person can't represent more than one totem, so there's a lot of totems that aren't being represented. And in this scenario, the songlines of the koalas, which is female specific, gender specific, it's not being protected.
And the, like, trees here, the koalas eat that.
Yeah, we've got, so the songlines, if you're aware of what songlines are, they sometimes it points out, like, the migratory migratory patterns of some of our animals, like the birds, the bats, the land-dwelling creatures like the koala in this instance. There's a lot of the eucalypts that they like to use for their homes, for their food sources. And
they're where they're digging and knocking everything down.
Yeah, and the koalas become extinct as of last year on the, you know, the endangered species list. There's no appreciation for the flora and the fauna as part of the ecology, which is just an environmental argument, but then associated to the spiritualism of the first peoples of this country, there's no appreciation for our spirituality when it comes to our songlines.
And this is World Heritage listed.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go back, because the developers are saying that throughout this whole process they've been negotiating and discussing their plans with the Yuggera people.
Six or seven, that's all. I haven't come to anyone else.
Yeah.
Right, so those six or seven...
I'm talking for what? There's, how many was in this mission? 2,500 Aboriginals were in that mission, and all their descendants are still here.
Indentured into the mission life, you know, back in 1892?
Yeah.
1897, that was when the mission started. It was opened around 1892. But, you know, through the historical colonial wrongs, without getting too nasty, it's led to the internal displacement of a magnitude of tribes. So where's their consultation? Where's their... where's the respect in not committing to a religious vilification on behalf of their customary practices when we're talking repatriation? Should the bones be found and proven by credible sources?
So that was
that they are.
We have a professor that's analysing the bones, eh?
Yeah. So the police, that they've said that they've analysed the bones and they've determined that they weren't human remains. Is that your understanding?
Well, it was. The question was posed in a federal, by a federal seat in Parliament last year. I think that was Amy McMahon from the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
And as a part of that, it's reached us down in the municipal law level with the local Ipswich City Council. And they've also requested for the findings of the bones back in the day, or last year. And, you know, the method that they've used is like earlier in the piece. I'm not too sure if they've conducted a second round of interrogation, or there'd be a better word, scientific analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of that, but from the initial outset of their first investigation, it came back that they were non-human remains and they were animal origin. And this was conducted via photo analysis, and it was also backed up, peer-reviewed by the New South Wales Police Force as well. So I believe, you know, Anastasia Palaszczuk has actually advocated for that practice to be a bit more funding to go into the forensic side of the police force. And since then, I'm not too sure if there has been another scientific analysis of the alleged...
Well, while that's on hold, why are they doing all this? So, if it's still on hold.
For those that don't know, I might ask you, Jill, if we can. For those that don't know, why is this land behind us here sacred to you?
Because the Aboriginal cemeteries at the back, and this was noted around here for dead people, and there's a big trench down there we've got to investigate.
Yeah.
How big is that trench? 20-something foot long?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
20, 40 foot long? And we've got to get that analysed, and And there's boral rings on this side. The two boral rings and a cricket field.
So you do believe that behind there there's the cemetery and there is human remains in there?
Yeah.
Well, scattered. There's just a spotted massacre, which is on some of the older, local government records, which was sort of since buried, but they've resurfaced. Yes, there's also scarred trees. There's a lot of the significance that we're trying to reiterate is back in the 70s in the 97-4 floods, as part of the damage that occurred here out of that the state heritage listed or national heritage listed cemetery down the back, the bones have resurfaced and they've had to rebury them, and it's not there's no report that you can find to see if they were complete skeletal remains that were restored. So the whole Deben Creek is a sensitive area due to that magnitude of that.
They should have that ground penetrating machine in before they started doing what they're doing.
Let's talk with your host, Dan Rennie.
Yeah, we're down here at Deben Creek, and for those who don't know, it's about a 40-minute drive from Brisbane CBD. It's a sacred site, and the mob have been camped out here trying to preserve and keep this sacred site away from developers. Uncle, can I get your name and your mob, your country?
Excuse me. My name's Jody Williams. I'm Darumbal and Gangaloo from Central Queensland. And what you're saying is correct, but there is absolute another matter going on here, and that is the bones down the back. We are here to protect what we think is over 200 people have been murdered and buried down the back. We know where the trenches are. We know, the GPR's been done. We know where they are. And yet, nobody wants to deal with this. It's just devastating. Now, look at the destruction. You know, even the trees. I'm not really caring about the buildings. They're immaterial, but the trees and the land, it's just ruined.
There's a lot of sadness here today.
Yes.
There's a lot of sadness, and you can feel it amongst the people here, especially with this overbearing police and security presence. what's the deal with this?
Yeah, 4:15 this morning, the police arrived here, giving me a piece of paper to say that we needed to remove ourselves, and I said, all right, we will remove ourselves, and they said, no, you have to do it now. Well, it says on the piece of paper that we can do it. You know, I've got the piece of paper. And, yeah, so we were all taken away, taken out of there. Our cars were put on trucks and taken away. My caravan, the only thing I live in, me and my wife, apparently has been damaged, but that's been taken too. So we've actually got nowhere to live tonight, nowhere to stay. Yeah.
It's strange because the cops don't know what's going on, really. The security doesn't know what's going on. And there's no open dialogue between the people who are doing the damage and the old people here.
Yeah. And this is on top of the so-called Yuggera and Yuripil people that have native title determination. That hasn't gone through court yet. So how can they be following that line of discussion with these people when they're not even native title applicant, they're applicants, but they're not being proven to be native title whatever.
Yeah.
And so you've got two or three people signing off on this for a whole bunch of tribes. But we know for a fact it's 200 people. It's just common sense. It can't be all Yuggera and Yuripil people. It's got to be other nations. That's why I'm here. I've got the paperwork that says that my tribes have been through this country. And not just one, it's like a heap. Brought all the way from Central Queensland down to the courts in Ipswich and then put out here. All right. So, what I'm saying is, there's no way it's just Yuggera and Yuripil people down the back buried in their holes. So, they do not have the right to speak for all of us because it's our people, not just theirs.
Thanks for speaking to us on Let's Talk, Uncle.
Thanks, brother.
So what's happening here right now, boys?
I think the Union Delos have got permission to go in on site now, so
right of entry notices.
I can't let my mum in. Her grandmother's buried here.
So, yeah, well, traditional rules, you should be letting an elder go in probably with them and having a look and negotiating. And it's hard to say, I don't like saying this, but we're non-Indigenous representation going in to a negotiation site which is Indigenously owned. So like, it's a sacred site that we should be negotiating with the elders of the local traditional mob, but nothing's been done. So, yeah, hopefully they can get some photos and see what they've done so far, but they've already knocked down a heap of trees. Mm. I know a fair few years ago, they were talking about protecting koalas, and this is a main site for them. So it looks like they were knocking down near a cemetery site as well, and we've got some traditional carved rocks down near the creek, which they're heading towards as well. So hopefully this will seize all action at the moment, and we'll see what happens from here.
What's already happened here this morning, Bruce? Because there's a lot of sadness here at the moment, a lot of anger, understandably, as well, and a lot of mob just wondering, what's unfolded so far.
Well, I got a phone call this morning saying that they came on site. They had tactical police force. They had about 60 to 70 police apparently on site, and moved everyone on. So that anyone that was on site got pushed off site. If they resisted, they got locked up, and then they had a couple of tow trucks here picking up everyone's vehicles and dropping it somewhere and told them they can go and collect it from there. So it all happened quite quickly this morning. There was it was pretty much a forced entry anyways because there was no permission. I don't know who rocks up at 4 o'clock in the morning and saying he's got to get moving. So just see what happens after this little walk through and hopefully they can stop the work from proceeding.
Everyone's very emotional here today and it's understandable why, but yeah, Bruce, why are you down here? Why are you making a stand-up?
The main reason why I'm here is my missus is a Thompson. This is her country. My kids are from here, so I go out and teach cultural education, as you know, and teach it at schools and trying to break down that barrier about Aboriginal culture and heritage and especially sacred sites. You're knocking down a sacred site now. The knowledge is everything and oral stuff and storytelling throughout people. If they build over top of a sacred site, which is, something that, means a lot to our people, how are my kids supposed to learn about this site? In 10 years' time, there could be a bloody house built on burial site, which is known to be here as well. Well, they're killing all access to all sites. It's shit. They're doing it all with all the mornings. They said, once we finish with it, we'll give it back to you. There's nothing left. They've drained all the water sources. They've drained all the nutrients out of the soil. They've knocked down trees which belong to all the animals. We don't own land. We just live in peace with it. And these guys want to make a profit off something that's not even theirs in the first place. It's a load of crap.
Thanks, Brother Ron.
Yeah.
I'm going to get around and yarn some of the mob who are down here on the ground. How you going, sis?
Hey, how are you?
What's your name, your mob, your country? Where are you from?
Carla Davidson Fugwandi. My mob's Yuggera mob. My Thompson mob's from here. And my other mob's Kala Lee, Thugamindu Yulo area.
Can you give us a bit of history about this place?
So my great-great-grandmother, Mabry Fordney Richards, she's a Thompson. She was the last one born on Deben Creek. And her mother, Florence Thompson, the oldest of the clan, she was born at Gatton, Blackfella Creek. It's just like, and there's burial sites, massacre sites, ceremonial sites out here. There's a lot of sites out here. There's a lot of my great-grandmother's sisters were buried on country here. They're desecrating the land. They've been doing it for years. Stockland's asked us to agree to something, which we don't agree to. They want to build a lot of houses out here. It hasn't been properly negotiated with our mobs and our people. The Yup group, they don't represent a lot of our families at all. Culturally, respectfully, they should be including all of our families to bring to the table and yarn about it. That's culturally respectful, and they've never done that.
There's a huge police and security presence here.
It's disgusting. It's like, our people, they've always said our people are violent, violent people. But the thing is, we're here standing peacefully,
yes,
which we are doing, because this is wrong. This is culturally and legally wrong.
It is.
It breaks my heart. My mum's an elder here. You know what I mean? How can they stand here and do the wrong thing? There's a natural corridor here. There's natural springs here. There's cultural sites. There's heritage sites. Yeah.
The security and police mob presence here, pretty much outnumber the mob who
they are. They do. And you've got police liaison officers who I asked respectfully earlier to come and stand with your people and come and yarn with your people and do your job and be, you know, be engaged with our mob and the police and people that are on site.
To be the liaison,
That's what their job is. Yep. And they're not doing that. They need to respectfully step down from their roles. They're not doing that at all. They don't represent our people.
I noticed across the way here there's a lot of houses and you can see where the bushland used to be. A big sign here for land selling now, and then, you know, we turn around here and this is what we're faced with. How long has this been going on, sis?
For years. A lot of these people that live in these houses do not want this. We've got a lot of support from these mobs that come here and they say they don't want this because it's the wrong thing to do.
We've got a lot of CMFEU mob rocking up now, showing their support.
Supported us for years, and a lot of people have laughed about having that. You know, a lot of people out here that aren't, you know, aren't First Nations people. However, they're people that believe in the right things to do. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if they're not First Nations people. We got black. Whether you're black, white, or brindle, you should know whether you're doing the right or wrong thing. Culturally, this is not right.
What happened here this morning, sis?
I wasn't here early this morning, but there was about 60 to 70 tactical police coming out. Now, what for? That's bully tactics. You don't need that. We had people living out here. We had animals living out here, and they didn't care about that at all.
The cranes and the bulldozers are going on in the background there still as we speak. But, the CMFEU have gone in there now to try and negotiate. What's the outcome here? And I know it's really tense and it's hard to say what's going to happen, but it feels like it could explode at any moment.
We just don't want them continuing with it. They need to negotiate and yarn with us respectfully. They haven't done that. The union's trying to yarn with them, but they haven't done that. They haven't even asked about our elders. Respectfully, they should be saying, hey, can we yarn with some of your elders? They haven't even done that since I've been here this morning.
Thanks for your time, sis, and we'll be covering this extensively.
Thank you for making a presence out here. Thank you.
Catching up with some of the mob on the ground here at Demon Creek. Bruce, could you get your name and where you're from?
Oh, yeah, bud. Marcus, yeah. And I live here on land with the people, Yagra.
How long have you been out here?
Oh, a few months now, but in and out for a few years, so, yeah.
Pretty crazy what's going on here. We're seeing the bulldozers rolling through. There's coppers absolutely everywhere. A massive contingent of security that nearly outnumbers the amount of people here. How does it feel as a resident to wake up to what we saw this morning?
Man, it's pretty heartbreaking. The entire community out here in Ipswich has put in a lot of time and effort into the community gardens. This is free food for the people of Ipswich. We had a lot of native plants, vegetables, everything you can imagine to sustain a community health-wise. And not only have they come in and bulldozed it, they've put herbicide all over the ground to make sure that we can never, ever rebuild the community garden here or live on the land and grow things. So that's pretty disgusting. And for Teresa to have turned her back on the people here after pledging support is absolutely heartbreaking. And you totally lose confidence in any kind of regime that says one thing and then goes and does another. So I'm a bit heartbroken.
And Teresa, of course, the mayor of Ipswich, Teresa Harding.
Teresa Harding, the mayor of Ipswich, correct? Yep, that's right.
Look, you know, it's really sad to see so many people who are displaced now. It's heartbreaking. And what happens now?
Man, absolutely nobody knows. There's nowhere for anyone here to go because, as everyone knows, there's some kind of housing crisis going on. And for them to be kicking this many people off the land, I mean, we get hundreds of people through here every week, Indigenous that come and connect with country and sit on the land and eat free food and dance and sing. This is pretty much it. Once this is gone, I don't think the community in Ipswich will be a community. There won't be one. There will not be one. So this is devastating, not only for the people here, but for everyone that lives in Australia to see this kind of thing happening to their land. I'm honestly just so shocked. I never thought this would actually ever happen.
Where are you going to go, brother? Have you got somewhere to go, or what happens to you now?
Oh, I have to sleep here on the side of the road. I'm not leaving, no. I'm going to stay and just keep trespassing and keep getting kicked out, keep getting arrested. They've got no legal right to do this at all. So if they want to arrest me under having no legal right, then they can keep charging me with whatever they like.
Thanks for your time, brother.
Thank you, man.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Dan Rennie, on the ground, speaking with the local traditional custodians and members of the camp as bulldozers clear the sacred site at Deebing Creek in Ipswich, Queensland.
No more whispering in our mind. Let's talk, Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on Triple A Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au, proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.
Yeah, there we go, some of the sounds from down there at Deebing Creek yesterday as the bulldozers rolled in to displace the dozens of people who were living and staying on Deebing Creek, that sacred site which is now currently being demolished. We will be keeping keeping an eye and an ear of what's happening there on the ground and getting some more comments from those in the circle. I suppose, you know, we'd love to reach out to Mayor Teresa Harding and the federal member as well. And of course, you know, the different people who've had a say in what's going on here. It's really, really saddening, and it was emotional yesterday, but listening back today, even more so. And as I reflect, you know, the compassion or the lack of compassion that is going on there. And, these poor mob who are, you know, their traditional lands are now essentially homeless in the midst of a housing crisis. And we're seeing the same thing, you know, not far from where we sit here in the west end of Brisbane, just over the way at another culturally significant site, which is Musgrave Park and the big annual Greek festival, Panieri. Is rolling into town, and there are, you know, a number of people who are sleeping rough in the park as we speak, who again will be displaced. So, yeah, it's a very saddening time. It is right now here in southeast Queensland, and more so right across the country, with many feeling the pinch. We'll be getting some more updates from what's happening down there at Deebing Creek. So keep it tuned right here on Triple A Murray Country. You've been listening to Let's Talk.